Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I remember sitting with my dad on his deathbed as he was dying from pancreatic cancer, and he regretted so many things. And it was all of the things that he left undone or that he didn't have the courage to do in his lifetime. And I never want to be in that position where I feel like I wasn't courageous enough to try, even if I fail.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Torin Shum, and in this episode of Property Investory, we're speaking with Jackson Milan, a successful entrepreneur of almost 15 years, founder of Aurelius Financial, and author of three inspiring novels. In an inspiring rags to riches journey, Milan reveals how he overcame poverty and reached financial freedom. And he did it all after failing school. To start, Milan shares the noble goals of his business in helping others, like a shepherd herding his flock. And he reveals a little about his very own animal sanctuary.
My business is Aurelius Financial. I've started it over 6 years ago with my business partner, Sam. I've been involved in the wealth and business strategy space for over 15 years. And we're really passionate about helping service-based business owners maximize their profit in their business, build a saleable asset that provides them with freedom, and then allows them to create financial freedom faster. And I really got into this space because my parents were business owners. I remember as a kid watching them slave away in their business. They were very, very good at what they did, but they never made any money. It was always hand to mouth. And I realized that something was wrong. They didn't understand the language of money. They didn't know how to make money work for them. And I set out to become a financial advisor to help people like my parents. And I realized that advice is just one part of the equation. People need to be educated and coached so they can make better decisions for themselves. And so I started calling myself a wealth coach and working with my clients to help them implement what we call the wealth mastery machine, the financial operating system that basically sets their money on autopilot. And over the last 15 years, we've helped our clients build over $2 billion in combined wealth. And I've been fortunate enough to create financial freedom at 34. And so we definitely practice what we preach.
Sharing a little bit about his average day, Milan does not make business management look effortless, although it certainly makes it look easy.
We have an animal sanctuary up in far north Queensland. It has been my lifelong dream to create an animal sanctuary. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a vet, but I didn't want to do all the icky stuff that vets have to do. So I figure creating an animal sanctuary gives us all of the best of what we do. We've got over 100 animals. So I'm usually up at about 6 a.m. I'll go let all of the animals out because they all free range, feed them, spend some time with them. And then I get back to my office. I usually play Spanish guitar for about 30 or 45 minutes, set myself up for the day and get stuck into it. We've got a team of over 30 now. So I focus on setting them up for the day, working with our leadership team and doing all of the stuff that I enjoy. It's a great journey.
It is a great journey. So where did your love for animals come from? Because I can admit 100 animals, I'd be freaked out actually, to be honest. That's a lot of animals to manage. It's like you're almost having your own zoo.
It is almost like a zoo, mate. It's actually not as complicated as you might think. I think we probably take care of all the animals in less than an hour a day. We've got a pretty good system. And particularly because we free range all of our animals in terms of cleanup and whatnot, we practice what we call permaculture, where we've created an ecosystem where the animals and our food forest and everything that we've got kind of works in harmony. So it was a lot of setup, but the ongoing work and maintenance is pretty straightforward. So it's pretty enjoyable. But we love it. It's always been a passion of mine. And look, I think this is really important, mate. When we're talking about wealth, whether it be property or business or shares or whatever it might be, these things are just vehicles. And unless you are really clear on what it is that you're trying to achieve, the destinations that you're working towards, the vehicles don't matter. And the big thing for me is I've never been money motivated, which might come as a bit of a surprise for someone who is called the wealth mentor, but I've always been passionate about creating a life on purpose, of doing the things that I want to do, being able to have freedom of choice. And this is the freedom of choice that I want. And I'm very fortunate that I've been able to create it in my 30s and hopefully can inspire others to decide what they want, even if it's unconventional, and go and chase after it.
Yeah, I love that. It's so inspiring to be able to hear that, because ultimately, at the end of the day, exactly what you said, it is just a vehicle for whatever we use, such as property, business, etc. But what is your real purpose in life? Because then, you know, once you've achieved that, which I have as well too, similar to you, I'll go, what do I do next? And I was on that path going, I don't know what to do. So that's why I started doing all this meaningful and purpose and fulfillment type of stuff to try and seek what I'm looking for as well too. But it's really inspiring to be able to hear that. I'm also interested, and for the listeners out there who don't know a little bit about permaculture, could you sort of give that bit of background behind what that is?
Yes. So the idea is there's really two types of kind of agriculture. There's what we refer to as monoculture, which is what most of us are used to in terms of commercial farming, right? You see a field and there's just one thing planted. It's corn or it's sugarcane or whatever it might be. And the issue with that kind of system is that nowhere in the natural world does that exist. If you look at a rainforest, it's full of diversity. And you realize that a rainforest requires no maintenance. It requires no fertilizers. It requires no human intervention. Yet humans have somewhere along the line realized that they could maximize production by going down the monoculture route, but at what cost? And that cost requires a lot of maintenance, a lot of intervention, a lot of machinery, right? And it's actually depleting the environment. So the ideas of permaculture is that we want to replicate what happens in nature naturally. We want to try and create an environment that's symbiotic, whereby when you set up the system, it feeds itself. And ultimately, if you plan it and you execute it and you follow the principles, it will operate like a rainforest and it will produce substantial yields above and beyond other systems with very little work. So I like it because it's strategic. It's very much like the work that I do in my business and with our clients. Is that you've got to observe, you've got to understand what's happening. You've got to create the plan, create a hypothesis. You've got to go and test it. And then you've got to go and reflect and sometimes realize and acknowledge your mistakes and then go and optimize and then improve it over time. And the interesting thing, mate, is when we deal with nature and growing, and I'm a very impatient person, you can't rush nature. Things take time. Interestingly enough, we planted fruit trees recently that are going to take 15 or 20 years to reach maturity. And I'm like, wow, where am I going to be in 20 years' time? So I think it's a great metaphor for wealth, right? This is a marathon, not a sprint. When you do try and rush things, as we tend to do in this modern world, there are consequences. And I think it definitely taught me the idea of enjoying the journey, of enjoying the process, and not beating myself up and getting frustrated because it's taking too long. Good things take time.
Absolutely. And it's a journey. That's the thing. I think everyone always strives to try and get to the end result and go, yes, you know, I've made it. But the thing is, they forget the journey. And when you get there, you go, is that all? You know, you might enjoy it for a couple of minutes, maybe 10 minutes, an hour at most. And you go, oh, wow, I went all that way for what?
Exactly, mate. And look, I've been guilty of this myself, that when you reach that milestone, then you're just like, okay, what's next? And then you're always going to chase that next milestone. So when you can really enjoy the process of learning, of navigating the challenges, of overcoming adversity, it changes the energy that is in this situation. Because I think for many of us, particularly in this high-stress, high-pressure world, we're so filled with anxiety around everything. And like, what kind of life is that, right? Like where you're constantly anxious, you're constantly frustrated, you're constantly feeling that you don't have enough. And it's very much this kind of scarcity-based mindset. And that is deeply rooted in fear. And fear is not a great way for you to live life. And I think this is the best part of a lot of what we teach here, right? Is that if we can enjoy that journey, if we can think abundantly, and we can treat this like a game. Because let's face it, most of these problems are first world problems, right? And we just work through it. And it changes the whole dynamic of wealth building, in my opinion, and living life for that matter.
Rough circumstances were never going to stop him. In an inspiring tale, he shares some details about what it was like growing up as Jackson Milan, navigating poverty and loss. It's a lesson to all listeners. Anyone can make gold from straw.
So I was born in Wollongong, grew up in the Gong, And I moved around a little bit. My parents separated when I was very young, so I was always traveling between Wollongong and Sydney. So I moved schools a lot. My parents had different businesses and different pursuits, so we traveled around a lot. And interestingly, at school, I was never a good student. I was perpetually that kid that the teachers said, Jackson's quite bright, but if only he applied himself. And interestingly enough, throughout all of my school life, I wanted to be a vet. And I think it was about year 10 that I had a teacher kind of give me the harsh reality to say, Jackson, you need like a 98 UAI, or for the young whippersnappers, an ATAR in today's day and age. And they only let about 70 people into the course. And she's like, you're not going to get there. You don't apply yourself. And I'm like, okay, there goes that. So I remember asking my dad, I said, Dad, this lifelong dream's out the window. What do I do? And he goes, well, if you want to make money, you've got to be around money. And that was really the turning point for me. I took that literally. And I'm like, well, okay, my parents have never had money. I'm not strong at maths. I don't kind of get all of these concepts. Let's give this a crack. And through my entire career of being ignorant, right, and going through the whole process and simplifying the frameworks, that's really been the power of how we've been able to help so many of our clients make transformations. Because the common thread here, mate, and I'm sure you hear this a lot, there's people who refer to themselves as finance people. They're analytical. They're deep thinkers. They're strategic. They get it. And then there's the majority of people who don't get it, that they believe that they're not finance people, that they abdicate financial responsibility, and it's not for them. And I was one of those people. So through coming from that position, being forced to have to simplify this and spend as little time as necessary managing my money, then that's allowed me to then create all of this extra abundance of time to then go and live an amazing lifestyle. And that's always been the thing. It's about how do I create a means to an end? And I don't want to have to wait until I'm 60 and old and gray to be financially free and retired. My old man died at 66. My mum had a number of workplace accidents in her later stages of life, and is in a tremendous amount of pain in terms of mobility in her later years. So I didn't want to roll those dice. I wanted financial freedom now. So I wanted to create a business and create a philosophy that allowed me to do that. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to do things that most people don't tick off their bucket list until they do retire, spend a year traveling around Australia. We've bought our dream home. We've got complete freedom and flexibility from our business. I can do the stuff that I love. And it's how life should be. We shouldn't have to defer gratification indefinitely into the future for a tomorrow that, quite frankly, isn't promised.
That's right. That's right. I love what you just said there. I totally resonate. And the reason why I can say I resonate with that as well is because in the last year or so, I've had a lot of family members pass away, and they're much elderly. But when they had an accident, it really limited their mobility. And I've still got my grandparents who are like 90 odd years old, and they didn't do everything that they wanted to, because, you know, you're looking at them and go, wow, they're that old now, but they're stuck inside an apartment because they just can't go anywhere. And then I'm just talking to my parents, and my parents said that they wanted to do a lot more traveling, which I'm taking actually them away to New Zealand next month, which is exciting. But the thing is the things that we can do together as a family is very limited, because, you know, they're getting an older age, whereas I'm still relatively, you know, I'm not that young, but I'm still relatively young, where I can do bungee jumping and all those kind of exciting thrill things. And I can still travel around the world. And I didn't want to wait till I'm like their age, which is about 65, 70, to be able to do all that. So it's kind of, you see it in your family and your parents, and you just go, no, I don't want to be like that when I'm getting that age. I still want to be able to strong, but you're going to be limited because of age. And some people have to wait 20 plus years to be able to get there because they're saving up or doing whatever they need to do financially to be able to afford it. So why not live it now?
Exactly. And this is the dichotomy that we see in terms of traditional wealth creation principles, Tyrone, is that most of them are built on the idea that you must shrink yourself wealthy. The underlying principle of most wealth building is either you enjoy your life now, which means that you have to sacrifice more later, or you have to sacrifice now in order to enjoy your life later. And as somebody who, I'm neurodivergent, I've got ADHD, I look at the world in a very, very different way. That never excited me. I'm like, no, that's not for me. How do I have my cake and eat it too? How do I live an amazing lifestyle now and prepare for an amazing future where I don't need to sacrifice and compromise? And the traditional principles have a constant, and that constant is that you cannot grow your income. And therefore, if you can't grow your income, you must cut expenses. You've got no other choice. And this is the reason why I work with business owners, and I'm very passionate about entrepreneurship, because it is truly the only way that you have control over your income. Because the idea is, and our kind of cornerstone philosophy of how we work with our clients is built around what we call the 20-year roadmap. We help them document all of their lifestyle and financial goals over 1, 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. We define them, and then we reverse engineer them into a single income target, where I can say, Tyrone, if you want to achieve all of these things you want to do, this is how much you need to earn. And then we can work out a profit target, and then we can work out a revenue target, and then we can work out a client target, a number of leads. We can basically connect all of the activity you need to do to achieve the outcomes that intrinsically motivate you. And that's a light bulb moment for so many people. It certainly was for me. And since doing this myself, I've achieved 90% or more of all of the goals that I've set, and our clients are the same, because they're now like a dog with a bone, right? They've got light at the end of the tunnel, and it fundamentally shifts the way that you work towards financial freedom.
Totally, totally. And it's really interesting, and it's very much, I guess, established concept, or the idea is basically just working backwards from, you know, your end goal. But the problem is that people just don't understand the process that's involved to be able to do it. And then that's where they get stuck. And then they just say, too hard, throw it down, you know, and just chuck in the towel. And that's where people get stuck. So I think what you're doing is amazing, because you're helping people to be able to achieve that. Because I think everyone needs some kind of handholding or coaching to be able to get that done.
I agree. Because we're not taught this stuff, mate, right? It's not in the education system. And the unfortunate part of this, and like over the recent years, I've been able to build quite a big following on social media, but I constantly get the wrong questions. And I don't blame these people at all, but they're asking superficial questions that are the wrong questions. It's like, what stock should I pick? Like, when should I buy? What's the next thing that's going to 10X? And like, that is not the types of questions that you should be asking. Right? These are tactical, superficial questions, and that infers that you don't have a philosophy. You don't have an operating system around your financial decision-making, which means that you are subjective in your decision-making. And when you're making emotional, subjective decisions, it is not predictable and rational. And money should be predictable, rational, and rule-based. And that's the issue. And that's something I'm really passionate about, is thought leadership around wealth education, because no one's going to love your money like you do. You have to learn how to manage it effectively for yourself.
Coming up after the break, Milan shares his hardships with money growing up.
And looking back on that situation, anyone else would feel sorry for me. But I never felt poor. And the reason for that is because my house was always filled with love.
He emphasizes the importance of identity in the face of success.
But I think it's so important that we practice gratitude and find this centered way of, what is my true purpose? If everything is removed, if my title is removed, my business achievements, my wealth, who am I as a person? What do I represent? What am I here to do?
He shares the value of having faith and trust in better things.
Exactly. And look, I think I've been very fortunate that, I don't know if there's somebody looking out for me, or whether it's fate or whatever it might be, but whenever those doors have shut behind me and forced my hand, there's always been a new door that's opened that's led me to bigger and better and more fulfilling things.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Growing up with little to nothing, Milan reveals the struggles of poverty in his rough schooling experience. Of course, perspective is everything, and Milan shares his.
It's really interesting. Looking back on my childhood, because we never had a lot of money, I still remember as a young kid, my dad built us a bed, and it was a wooden bed propped up by cinder blocks, and it was a double bed but with a single mattress that he found on the side of the road, right? And I would sleep on the mattress and he would sleep on the floor. And looking back on that situation, anyone else would feel sorry for me. But I never felt poor. And the reason for that is because my house was always filled with love. And what we lacked in money, my parents made up for in terms of experiences and presence and mentorship. And they always did everything they possibly could to make me feel like I was special. So I never felt poor in my entire life. And so I think I'm super fortunate that my parents were present. They sacrificed in their businesses and their careers in order to be there for me. Whereas I see that for many other people, like maybe their parents were going and chasing the money to provide that financial stability, but they weren't there, right? They weren't necessarily present. And I'm super fortunate for that. And I've lost my dad now, but I thank my mum all of the time. I say, Mum, you've given me the best gift that you possibly could, is that you forced me to have to learn how to make my own way in life. There's never been a silver spoon. There's never been handouts. So I've been forced to learn those skills, to create the confidence and to back myself to know that when I put my mind to something, there is absolutely nothing that will get in my way. Yeah, and that's the gift that my parents gave me. So I'm super fortunate for my upbringing and it's ultimately what's got me to where I am.
Yeah, wow. And I guess everyone perceives different perspective. And once again, rich, poor, it's different terminologies for different people's perception. So some people don't even care if they're rich or poor, whatever it is. It's ultimately, you know, what is it that you want to achieve in your own life? That's the purpose. And people from the poorest families are actually probably the happiest. I've seen that because I've been doing a lot of traveling in Southeast Asia, been through some of the slums, been something there. But the thing is that you can see as a family, they're sitting around just a small little table, having food, sharing a meal with you. They're the happiest people, you know, alive. And we're in, say, for example, back in Australia, we're stressing over just the smallest little things just to live a day to day and saying that things are high cost. You know, this driver ran in front of me and like all the simple things in life. It's just so important to look back and reflect on, and you kind of rung it true right there, said it there, spot on.
Mind-blowing, isn't it? I still recall my first trip to Southeast Asia, and I went to Vietnam, and I remember being in Ho Chi Minh City, and in the morning, all of these families coming out and cooking on the side of the road with cars going past, and I'm sure you've seen it, all of the electrical wires hanging down. You could almost get electrocuted at any moment, and I never saw someone upset. I never saw someone, you know, that look of stress, right? That look of dread. They always had a smile on their face. They were always connected. They were always present. I think it's an amazing metaphor for life, right? Like your material belongings and your achievements and all of these accolades and whatnot really mean nothing unless you are a happy and content human being. And I've done a lot of work on this, mate, because I think particularly when we're in entrepreneurship and in this wealth space, there's this pressure to keep up with the Joneses, right? And I see so many very successful people. I've even had clients who've exited nine-figure businesses and be completely empty and burdened by their success. And I've done a lot of work studying stoicism, actually in the process of writing a book at the moment on kind of modern-day stoicism as an entrepreneur. But I think it's so important that we practice gratitude and find this centered way of what is my true purpose? If everything is removed, if my title is removed, my business achievements, my wealth, who am I as a person? What do I represent? What am I here to do? And until you answer that question, all of these things are just going to be a magnifier for your happiness or your dread. And I know which side of that I'd prefer to be on.
Despite his terrible grades, Milan's aims were high. Armed with nothing but prayers and optimism, his dreams of starting to become a vet were futile. However, the future had a reward for persistence in store for him.
So interestingly enough, I got horrible grades at school. I think I finished with a UAI of like 60 or something. It wasn't even high enough to get into university. So as soon as I left school, I decided that I was going to go and try and find a traineeship as a financial advisor. And I basically door knocked until I got an opportunity. I didn't take no for an answer. And the interesting thing was like, without my beard, I'm baby-faced. I looked about 12, right? And I basically just went in there with confidence. Exactly right, mate. And I just went in there with confidence. And I got this role at this place called the Financial Advice Center as a trainee advisor, which starting out, it was telephone sales, right? And we were doing outbound telesales for a big major bank selling insurance products. And at the time, we were going through our training and to become a financial advisor over a period of time. And in this environment, I absolutely hated it. Like you could imagine, it looked like a scene out of The Wolf of Wall Street, Tyrone. Like it was in the middle of the city of Sydney. It was an entire floor of reps on the phone. You could feel this almost toxic, thick emotion in the air of just people on the dialers. And then when people would make a sale, they'd get up and they'd ring a bell. And if you were on a phone, you'd have to say, oh, it's somebody's birthday, we're just celebrating, to try and kind of convince them that they weren't going to be the next victim of this phone sales. And I hated it, man. I'm like, I've made a mistake here. Because in my head, I'm like, a financial advisor, I'm going to be helping people like my parents. I'm going to be helping them navigate these really difficult decisions. And in this environment, all they cared about is basically earning commissions for selling products to people like my parents who didn't need them. And I almost quit. But before I quit, I said, look, if you're not going to take responsibility for trying to change this industry, who will? And it was at that point that I started calling myself a wealth coach. And I built a philosophy of what I was going to do to help people like my parents make their first dollar of wealth, how to get started investing originally, how to understand things like superannuation and cash flow and debt management and all of these things. And then ultimately, that's kind of got me to where I am. So I'm very fortunate that my perspective on things has led me where I am. I've always been trying to challenge the status quo and find my own way.
That's so cool. So basically from that, it was like that painful soul-destroying moment that really helped push you to actually do something about it. And that change allowed you to become the wealth coach that you are today. But obviously, there's got to be a journey. I'm actually curious to hear a bit more about that journey. So once you decided, obviously, you got to take action. What was the action? What did you do to get to that point of where you are now?
I wish I could say that at that point, I decided to jump straight into my business and do all of these things, but I didn't. And I jumped around some different private advisory businesses, and I had some good mentors and some not so good mentors over the years. And although I had this drive and urge to start my own business, I was scared. And there was this constant self-limiting belief. It's like, Jackson, like, what if you don't get any clients? And what if you don't hit your revenue targets? And why don't you just stay on this cushy salary, and you've got annual leave and sick leave and you're safe? And I did that until my mid-20s. And in fact, I got to a point whereby I got fired from my position, and it was because I'd actually started a consultancy on the side, and my boss found out, and he thought that there was a conflict of interest, and he fired me. So he basically pushed me out the door and forced my hands to go all in on my business, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Oh, yeah. It's always a blessing in disguise.
Exactly. The fear that I had before I jumped into it full time, when I was kind of being tentative, was completely dissolved as soon as I was forced into that position. And my demeanor, my attitude to everything completely changed. And I just backed myself 100%. I'm like, you cannot fail. And that's basically been my philosophy ever since. I've been fearless in my approach. And I'm now fortunate enough to have an 8-figure business. We've got over 1,000 clients. And we're continuing to grow. We'd love to work towards a public listing over the course of the next 5 years. And so it's just constantly trying to level things up without compromising my values in the process.
That's wonderful. I love how, yeah, that thing, that turnaround, you know, sometimes you just need that extra push to be able to get out of your comfort zone. And the best way is for someone to do it for you, because obviously we won't do it ourselves. And I think every one of us in our lives has been through some point in life, you know, to be there, whether it be family, children, or whatever it is, life circumstance changes to push you further so that way you can actually grow and change. Otherwise, yeah, we can easily get stuck in the job and just do it because we need it for the money, not because we've got something that's important to us.
Exactly. And look, I think I've been very fortunate that, I don't know if there's somebody looking out for me, or whether it's fate or whatever it might be. But whenever those doors have shut behind me and forced my hand, there's always been a new door that's opened that's led me to bigger and better and more fulfilling things. And look, some people don't have that same level of luck, because there's always going to be an element of luck. And I think if I could impart any kind of wisdom, is just take responsibility for jumping in those decisions. Like, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And I remember sitting with my dad on his deathbed as he was dying from pancreatic cancer, and he regretted so many things. And it was all of the things that he left undone or that he didn't have the courage to do in his lifetime. And I never want to be in that position where I feel like I wasn't courageous enough to try, even if I fail. At least I tried, because it's the not knowing that hurts the most.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's those moments where you go, man, I cannot, you know, I can already picture myself. If dad was at that point in time, I don't want to be in that position when I get to my deathbed. I want to be able to say, I lived an amazing, fulfilling life. I did whatever I could to give back, et cetera, et cetera. So thankfully, Milan has an amazing, fulfilling life. However, it wasn't always that way. Everyone has to start from somewhere, even Milan.
So my first advice business was actually a franchise, and basically got involved in this business, which was a publicly listed business. I owned a couple of franchises and we worked on scaling them to the number one in the country, number one and number two in the country. We had a lot of success and it was great. Franchise was fantastic because it provided a lot of the infrastructure and basically minimized the number of things I needed to work on. We already had the brand, we already had systems and processes and things like that. And I did a lot to build my own philosophy around that. And it could really focus my attention because I think the thing that most people overlook when they start a business is the sheer volume of things you've got to do. And in a franchise, that gives you a lot of that infrastructure. However, you've got to realize that you're a pawn on someone else's chessboard. And I realized that I'd already got to number one and number two in the country with our two businesses. There was no further to go. And it was that point that I realized I needed to sell out and then start from scratch. So we started Aureus about 6 years ago, and we wanted to do things a little bit different. Now, most financial advice businesses help everyone. They don't niche. They're like, we give financial advice. If you need financial advice, we can help you. And in most good businesses must niche. If you want to be able to grow and scale systematically, you need to be able to help a certain subset of individuals with a specific number of problems. So we focus exclusively on helping 6- and 7-figure service businesses. So our clients are tradies, professional services businesses, medical and allied health businesses, and fitness businesses, basically. So the service businesses that are selling high-ticket services and solving high-ticket problems. And the interesting thing is that these people know how to make money because they've already got to a certain level of scale, multi-6 figures or 7 figures. They just don't know how to keep it. And that is the perfect situation for them to come to us. And we basically help them with 4 things. Our business, firstly, is education. We teach these people how to understand their business numbers, how to maximize their profitability, how to improve their cash flow, how to grow and scale, how to build a saleable business. And then when we maximize profits, then we help them build wealth by creating a strategic plan. We provide them with financial advice and help them implement that advice and basically build their wealth. Third part is accounting. As we know, most of us don't want to pay any bonuses to the ATO. So we help them structure and make sure that they keep as much of every dollar they earn as they possibly can within the law. And we also help them with finance. So we love property. We live and breathe it. We believe second to business, it's the best way to build wealth. And the idea is we take business profit and we should turn that into good quality property wealth. But as a business owner, when you're buying property, you need to get finance from a bank. And most business owners really struggle because they don't understand the rules of finance. So we work with them to create a finance strategy and either show them how to get the finance they need or set income targets and work with our accounting team to improve their profitability so they can service the debt that they're trying to do to achieve their goals. So that's basically the 4 core parts of the business.
That's wonderful. It's very easy to understand. In the next episode of Property Investory, Jackson Milan reveals the rash mistakes he made.
I just couldn't get this deal over the line. And I got the shits. Like, I just got frustrated. Like, I'm done. This is it. And I booked a trip to Thailand and I blew half of my deposit.
He shares his greatest life lessons.
But what I didn't realize is that through the depreciation, there is actually a reduction in the cost base, meaning that although I'm getting a cash back on the cash flow as a result of the depreciation, it lowers my cost base, meaning that it's increasing my capital gains tax when I sell. And that was the next big lesson that I learned.
He encourages listeners to take a leap of faith.
That unless you've got a significant purpose of why you are foregoing your peace of mind, you will never move past that invisible ceiling. And what I basically said is, well, if I feel the emotion of loss twice as much as the emotion of gain, I must put twice as much energy and effort into pursuing the gain and the purpose behind pursuing the gain.
And that's next time on Property Investory.